Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. All right. Well, hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. I'm pumped, man. Today I have Joseph Cabrera with us. He is actually, let me back up real quick and just say this. I found this running shoe company. I saw their shoes. They looked really awesome. Like, you know what? I think I'm going to try a pair out. I got them. I dug them. So kind of started looking around at the company, what they're about. We're going to get into that. And Joseph is president and co-owner of the company. So I reached out to him. I saw his background a little bit. So he's a West Point grad, was in the military, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. Was actually a senior executive, and then he moved over into this space he's in now. So as you guys know, man, I like to interview high performers, people that are doing great things in life. My dad was a military guy, was in the Army. And so I sort of have like this affinity for, hey, I think military has great leadership principles. Puts out a lot of people in the high levels, and especially somebody that went to West Point. So, Joseph, man, thank you for being on.
Yeah, brother, man. It's so good to be on, Chad. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. So, all right, well, let's do this, man, for our listeners. Kind of just start out with your background. Like, where did you grow up? Since we have a lot of athletes and coaches, you know, maybe some of the sports you played, those type of things.
Yeah, no, it's great. So I'm originally from South Texas, right from like border town down south. We're about 15 minutes away from the borders where I grew up. It was not uncommon growing up to be able to jump back and forth from the U.S. You know, we'd go on a Sunday, grab brunch over, you know, over Mexico and then come back. I mean, it was very, very different world. Now, maybe not as easy to do it, but grew up in South Texas and, you know, growing up actually had the school that I went to was one of the last, it's gotta be the last school, if the only one. It still had an active live shooting range at the school, at the high school. And so I actually shot competitively in school. That was my sport for a while. And then, so I didn't actually find, I would say, physical sport or love for it actually until probably later in my life, where then I joined the military. West Point is actually what really drove that level of sport into me. Everybody there has to be an athlete. And so when you show up, not only do they, I mean, your first three classes are survival swimming, boxing, and, you know, you take some level of combatives and what they call military movements, which is just a fancy term for gymnastics. You actually got, like, I remember getting graded on doing backflips and stuff, which was atrocious, man. You know, just trying to figure all that out. But so anyway, backing up to where I grew up in South Texas, small little town, great folks. It's one of those places that never changes when, you know, wherever, you know, whenever you go back, it's the same thing. Same taco stands are there. The same people that you meet are still doing those things. But I was fortunate enough to leave and take off. Now, I will say that growing up, we used to do these stints a couple years overseas. My dad, working for the government, military guy himself as well, and then working for the government, we'd do these stints. We'd be in Texas for a few years, and then we'd go for 2 years and live in Korea. We'd come back, you know, a couple years in Europe. And so as a kid, being able to not only feel wholesome about where I grew up in South Texas with just, you know, really down-to-earth folks, I felt really fortunate growing up and being able to see different perspective and how culture worked and the fact that, you know, we aren't all the same. So that was kind of my upbringing in a nutshell. And then of course, West Point took me to New York. And then after that took me to places like Alaska and Afghanistan and all that. And I'm happy to dig into any of those things.
Yeah. So, I mean, first off, that's like you said, the culture and uniqueness of even just the schools right down there on the border town.
Oh yeah.
And then being a military kid and getting to travel and see all those things. Culture is, so it's funny because I coach and I teach PE. Everything in my life is about kind of physical education or physical movement. And But my dad was a history teacher. I have a minor in ethnic studies. Studying other cultures is actually kind of one of my secret hidden passions. And so I'd love to hear that and hear about those things. So, well, let's jump to West Point though, man. So tell me about, because, and I think I told you this, one of my athletes just got accepted in West Point. I'm pumped.
Yeah, congrats.
So what was it like going to West Point? I mean, for those that don't know, it's exceptionally hard to get into in the first place, but tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, man. Life-changing experience. First of all, congrats to your athlete there. I think it's impressive, but I didn't really appreciate the process until I got through it. And even then, I would say years later. But West Point for me was not something that I originally thought I was going to do. I actually had a full scholarship to go to University of Texas here in Austin. And it was actually between that and A&M. And I was trying to figure out, all my friends were kind of going to one or the other. And so I just thought I was going to pick one. And make a long story short, I had actually, once I had gotten into UT, I said, well, I'm done. That's where I'm going. And I hadn't gotten into Texas A&M. I said, I'm going to pick between the two. So I actually went short on my application at West Point. I just stopped kind of midway through. And I actually got a call early before, I think it was the beginning of my senior year. And the recruiter there that kind of operates to say, hey, man, you never finished your app. I said, no, I've already decided to kind of go to one of these other schools. So that's going to be what I'm going to do. My friend, he was, well, why? I said, well, my friends are going there. So, you know, and they get good programs, and they're great programs. And he said, look, man, the reason I gave you a call is I actually grew up just up the road in another town, sister town from where you are. It's actually where your application pinged. Nobody from there really applies. He goes, so I'm telling you right now, finish your application, do all the work you need to do. If you decide at that point, if you don't get in, then you don't have to worry about it. But if you do get in, then we can talk. I said, okay. So I came back, and I actually had a mentor back in high school, one of my teachers, that I kind of had brought that to him. And he's like, man, he's absolutely right. You got to give it a chance. And he goes, as a matter of fact, if you do get in, go spend a year. And if you decide not to, don't worry. There's West Point transfer credits will go to any university if you decide to leave after that point. So I did, I put in, and for those who are not familiar with the process, it's more than just kind of grades. It's pretty rigorous. There's actually a physical test component to it. You got to get nominated by a congressman or a senator, you know, so they have limited number of spots they can recommend young folks to go to based on the allocation they get. Texas is very competitive. Texas, New York, and California. There's a running joke that everybody at West Point seems to be from those states, but that's actually where most of the allocations go to based on state size. And so it's very competitive in Texas, especially, you know, very patriotic state. And oh, by the way, there's so many people here that are, you know, more aware of it than I was back growing up. And so went to West Point and was able to get in, to my surprise, you know, being very competitive. I don't know what the acceptance rate is. It's probably what it's similar to it now, but I think it's probably about the same. But only about 1,000 person class, and they only expect, and there's tens of thousands of people, I guess, that, you know, that apply, or at least 10,000 folks that apply. So a pretty small acceptance rate and a pretty hard finish rate too. It takes quite a bit to get through it. I think out of the 1,000 folks that maybe entered in my class, I think I only graduated with, they do a good job with selecting them, but maybe 700 or 800 folks. And it's a competitive crew. I think the stats are out there where you'll see that it's not uncommon for 20 or 30% of the class to be valedictorians or salutatorians, all team captains. It's this place you go to, and it's just humbling, man. You show up and everybody, if you thought you were the bee's knees, not anymore. Like, you show up and everybody there is fierce, man. They all, you know, and I think that's part of the whole process, is the humbling of that school. And so anyway, you show up, and I show up there right afterwards, and I learned very quickly that, you know, first I was a little bit, I guess you would say, conscious about the fact that I had fairly humble roots. And yeah. So, you know, dad was a military guy. You know, my mom was an entrepreneur, ran restaurants and little cafes back in town. But you show up and you got folks that their parents are senators, maybe somebody's folks are vice president or whatever, to folks who like grew up in the Bronx and, you know, they played street ball and they're able to just, someone was able to give them some mentorship and get there. So you come to this place with high performing people, but from all walks of life. Yeah. And then not only that, but then you endure this pain together. The first summer, you actually show up, and instead of where most schools, I think, start in September, you show up there and you start, I believe, end of May or June. You get no summer. You show up, and the first 8 weeks is what they call cadet basic training. And that thing, that whole thing is to just strip you down to the bottom, take all the rust and paint off of what you thought you were coming in there. And it is physical. It's outside the entire time, and they just bring you down to where they're teaching you basic military tasks and stuff, but there's a lot of, you know, what we call indoctrination. It's what you would think. It's yelling, it's screaming, it's PT, it's all that stuff. So that's year one, man. And you start off, and after you get through that, then you start classes just like anybody else would after that. But I'm happy to dive into any particular that experience. And when you told me the other day that one of your athletes had gotten in, I know I'm probably articulating all the parts that may not seem that appealing, but if you can get through that part there, which you learn very quick about yourself, the school is designed to do one thing, and it's designed, and you're walking around and it's an incredible place. It's a little bit, you know, I tell folks when you walk around, it's a combination of like, you know, the Renaissance medieval times with the, it looks like a castle out there in the middle of New York. At the same time, it's got this weird kind of, not only lineage, but you see these statues of MacArthur and Patton and all these, you know, different things around, all these war heroes. You got a huge statue overlooking the main parade field of George Washington on a horse. And early on, you know, it's a special place. But when you're 17 or 18 years old, I don't think you have any appreciation for it. And so that's kind of was my initial kind of, you know, highlight to it, kind of getting in there. And I can dive into the academics and stuff too. I think that's also what makes the special sauce of the school. I'm happy to do that, you know, depending on what direction we want to go with it.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's highly academic. I know that Jack Arnold is my athlete. I'll give him a shout out. I'll make sure I see him.
Jack, congrats, man. And,
So, I mean, he was outside, like, you know, messaged me. It was a few months ago. It was before wrestling season, actually. Hey, coach, can you come out and time me? I got to run. I got to do this and that. And he was doing all of his stuff. And the kid's a hard worker, man. But academically, I know it is tough too. So, but let's kind of jump forward into your military career, because I want to hear a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So got done with West Point. Great experience, you know, kind of a pedagogy of sorts, you know, learning to be a warrior. It's all you do is you study there. All your classes are mixed with engineering and warfare. And that's what they're doing. They're preparing you to do one thing. And at that point in time, you know, all of us were very aware. It was in that 9/11 era, you know, and so we were very aware that our first job was going to be taking on a team and then going straight probably into combat shortly after that. And so what I decided to do at that point, towards your senior year, you pick your job. And I had picked the reconnaissance field as kind of where I was going to go after West Point. And my first assignment was not only reconnaissance, but it was an airborne reconnaissance organization based in Alaska. And so we were based in Anchorage, Alaska. So my first job was jumping out of airplanes in the Arctic with a reconnaissance team was my first job out of college. 22, 21 years old, given 35 guys to run and not only be able to run successfully, but prepare for combat in an environment that looked nothing like where we were going. It was Arctic, it was cold, and we were about to go to Afghanistan. I showed up to my unit in Anchorage, Alaska. 7 months later, I was in Afghanistan with that reconnaissance team doing our first operations out there for the better part of a year at a place called, perfect name for a place like that. It was right there on the Pakistan-Afghan border called Combat Outpost Wilderness was the name of the outpost. So just kind of really every other outpost there had been named after a war hero or somebody who had lost their life. We always joke that Wilderness just kind of was that rough of a place. I guess it was never really worthy enough of actual somebody's last name. So they just left it Wilderness. And it really was probably a best way to describe the place.
Yeah. So what was it like going from, you know, freezing Arctic type weather and all of a sudden you're in Afghanistan?
Yeah, man. It does get cold over there and does snow, but it's a shock. I'll tell you, the altitude kicked our butt. We had trained, Anchorage is about sea level is where we were. I mean, it's got some, you know, things, it's definitely got some mountains and some stuff that you can climb, but at the, you know, where we normally train pretty low. Well, I remember getting in, it takes several steps. You go from the United States to Europe or to, you know, Kuwait or wherever your hubs are. You go to many different things and the aircrafts get smaller and smaller every time you get there. We get to our final station, big Air Force base in Afghanistan. And then we fly into this smaller army base and we all jump on helicopters and we're flying. And the reason that's important is because we're getting out to this spot and the terrain is changing right in front of our eyes. I mean, we're flying out to this outpost. It was me and then another West Point buddy of mine. That's a dear friend of mine that we both were taking our reconnaissance platoons out there to this outpost. And we were basically going to be fighting together out there. And the terrain went from being level to being, I mean, I'm talking about flying through mountains at this point in time. And when we landed, we were at about 6,500 feet in altitude. And I got up, Chad, and when you get out and you just start walking, you put your packs on, it's a very normal event. You're not doing anything but walking, and you feel like you're breathing through a wet napkin. And the entire time you were just sucking all the wind out of yourself. And I remember going on, when you first show up, there's another unit that you're meeting there that you're basically there to replace. And they do about a week or two of handoff, you know, showing you the terrain, the hot spots, what's going on. And I remember thinking, these guys, all the guys, they're like, these guys are goats, man. How are they? We couldn't keep up. I mean, these guys have been living there for a year. And so they had acclimated with that weather and with that altitude. And often we'd go, I mean, when we were there for the year, we operate anywhere from 6,500 feet to 11,000 feet is where we would do operations in and out of. I'll tell you, when we got back to Alaska, man, we could run like gazelles. I mean, we were just so acclimated to it, but that's what the terrain was like. So it was an absolute just, it's kind of a culture shock for all of us. Even though I think these were steely eyed warriors, it was something that we did not realize or appreciate how much was going to kick our butt.
Yeah. So, all right, I'm going to come back and connect up with your military training here in a little bit as we talk about leadership.
Yeah, you got it.
So let's move forward. You know, you becoming a senior executive at FinTech and then decide to move from there to a brand new company. So I'm assuming just a little bit, I don't know you real well personally, right? But just kind of looking, I'm assuming you're the type of guy that's first not scared of challenges and maybe even embraces some challenges, you know? So why make that decision to jump into a fairly new company at Treyu as the president, as the co-owner?
Yeah, that decision actually came easier than I thought, easier than one would think probably. I had loved my time at the FinTech. You know, the guy that I was working with and helping run this company, Gabe, he was I left on all the, you know, all the best terms. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely something that I had a great time with. At the end of the day, though, there was a part of me that had missed this very fundamental part that I didn't appreciate when I was in the military, which was this equal balance of using my brain horsepower and being physical with my work was the part that I had missed. And so when Treyu came across, it was an easy decision to move into that, not only because it's a brand that requires movement and, you know, people wear great shoes and, you know, it's all about running. But the brand itself, it's very mission forward. When I talk about Treyu, folks ask me, hey, you run a company in town. What's it called, Treyu? What do y'all do?
Yeah.
And I say, we're a brand that honors simplicity, but we also happen to make running shoes. And folks are, it kind of blows their mind. Like, what do you mean when you say that? And the reason it was an easy jump for me is I realized that the reason the brand was doing so well is that the founder, Michael Krajcik, had really spent a lot of time making sure that this brand wasn't going to be like everything else. And as it started to take off, I think folks had started to take off with it just because the timing and the environment, I think, of where we're at today with social and Instagram and all the just heavy over inundation of information and stuff. Finally had a brand that said, you know, one of my favorite campaigns we ever put out there in Treyu, I think encapsulates kind of why that move was easy for me, is we had put a picture of one of our shoes out, one of our base models. And it was, it says, it ain't the shoes, friend, it's you. And it's a brand that like would rather not talk about the shoes. It's, you have everything it takes to be awesome. We're just here to help provide some tools if it helps. Otherwise, go get after it. And so it was an easy decision for me to move. I had loved my time at the FinTech, but at that point in time, it realized that I need to kind of get back to where my DNA, I think, ultimately ticked and kind of get away a little bit from the ones and zeros.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So I'm taking notes over here too, man. I'm a note taker. So I'm learning from people. Awesome. I'm trying to take notes and
love it, man.
Yeah. Getting, you know, I want to be able to know exactly what makes you tick and why you're good at what you do, you know? And that's one of the big things with podcasting. I listen to a lot of people's podcasts and we're going to shout yours out here in a little bit.
That's great. Thanks, brother.
So, you know, right now being a president of this company, tell me some of the things that you do as the president.
Oh man, it's everything. I think when you decide in business, unlike the military has got kind of very, I would say, really structured ways on what your job is or isn't. As a president, it's everything that ensures mission success. And I'd say primarily the things that I'm focused on every day is probably also something that's my strong suit, which is building the team. And so the way I describe it is I don't have to spend, although I do spend time touching everything, you know, Michael, my counterpart, spends a good amount of time. He's got that special sauce on our product and the way that we market and get those things out there. What I spend a lot of time in is as we're growing, and this is kind of was my strong suit and kind of reputation at the FinTech. Once you find something innovative and productive that can actually do good for the world, what I was good at doing is taking that product and scaling it and building the right team around that to ensure that whatever got thrown at the ship, that the team was going to be able to handle it, because competition is fierce out there. And so my job most of the day, in addition to looking at everything from financials and making sure we have enough capital raised to be able to fund inventory and looking at how we manage, you know, our vendors and all those other things that come along with the job, I'd say my number one job is making sure that I continue to find people to enhance our team more and more and more, especially when you're starting in this hyper growth stage. It can often be hard to shine a light on who and what you exactly need. So what I spend a lot of time today, Chad, it'll change. I imagine if you ask me this question a year from now, it'll be different. Right now, I spend a lot of my time kind of in the trenches, not only finding the right folks as we're growing the company. As a matter of fact, like right now, we're looking at customer service folks. I'm trying to make sure we got strategy behind, you know, how it is that we're also, you know, not only managing our finances, but also that we have the right people who can kind of think creatively about how we're trying to continue to be responsible in our growth. But what I spend a lot of time now doing is also making sure that the people we're bringing on are very much aligned with our culture first. Like that has to be, I'd almost, one of the things that I put out to one of our lead recruiters was, don't worry about finding don't find the best person, find the right person. Yeah. And so they might be the best accountant in the world. I want to know, I'd rather have a B plus accountant, a B minus accountant, and somebody who's really great on the culture spectrum. Extreme accountability has this idea of being able to understand that we are a mission first company. And if they don't believe in that stuff, then I'd rather pass, you know, even if they are the A plus student. So I guess to wrap it up, like as a president, most of the time I'm spending on developing the structure of the team, ensuring that the structure of the ship is really strong, and that can be in a lot of different facets. And then what I like to do is kind of be the resident devil's advocate. What I try to do is figure out how to kill my company all the time. Yeah. And the reason I think about it that way is if it's just an old kind of thing, the way I tick, and kind of maybe it's my military days or whatever, but I spend a lot of time trying to figure out where our shortcomings and gaps are, and then going and finding the right teammates to be able to go put them into those gaps so that we can, you know, reduce our vulnerabilities.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. I kind of do the same thing as a coach, man. It's almost,
oh, I bet.
Yeah, it's almost reverse engineering, you know, but you're thinking about like, what are some of the areas that we need to improve? What would I do if I was on the other side, you know, facing us? And then we can go back and kind of figure that out. But you know, I'd written down here as you were talking, you know, team and culture, and then you said them right after I wrote them down. What are you looking for whenever you're picking teammates? And I know that I said earlier, I want to connect back to military, because I know that your military training, your military leadership and other life experiences have allowed you to get good at building teams. Sure. So what are some of the qualities and characteristics you're looking for in teammates that you guys are bringing on to fit your company culture?
Yeah, man. A couple things, I think, as we're building it. So the way that I describe a trait, you from the outside looking in to understand our culture, I think to answer that question, I got to probably articulate what our culture is right now and where it's continuing to go. From the outside looking in, it can be seen as a very lighthearted, you know, we got colorways, we got different kinds of shoes that come out there. It's a very fun and approachable company. On the inside of the company, though, it's very regimented. People are fiercely accountable. There's this, I don't want to call it militaristic, but people have a very high standard in the firm, in the company. It's very regimented. But as you know, even watching it, when you watch a championship team, it looks fun that they're playing, but you know that in the locker room and when they train, it almost is not representative of the finesse that you see on the field. If you saw the blood, sweat, and grunt, and this really just kind of, it could be mistaken with this attitude of like, you know, unapologetic type folks are just, you know, very harsh if you weren't familiar with what that looks like. But inside the company, that is kind of what we're building, is that level of championship team that comes to bear. I'd like to build a team where I don't really have to check my folks. They're checking each other. And so that's kind of the where it's rooted. So what I look for, man, is really basic for me. I look for things that I know I can't teach. And so what I've learned in my career and in my teams is it's very hard to put things into folks that their mom and dad didn't already do. And as much as I'd like to spend time helping those people get their respect, timeliness, little things, right? And most of the times when we do an interview, we'll send them an assignment. And I don't really care how they do on the assignment, where most companies would care. I want to know that they read that little detail at the end that said submit by Monday, 3 p.m. That's the part I care about. Did you do it or didn't you do it at that time? And if it came in 3:05, and it was a great piece of work, I probably won't look at it just because you didn't think it was important enough to show up on time, you know, in those things. And so that's part of kind of what I look for, is just what are the things that, you know, that probably didn't learn, less about skill. And then I would also say the other thing that I look for as we're building this team is how well they can objectively disagree with their superiors. And so I know it's a weird thing, especially coming from a military guy, but one of the things that I've found that makes really strong teams are teams that are filled with confident yet tactful people, people who are respectful. I want to be able to be in a meeting and say, hey, we're going left. And I want somebody who works for me to say, that's not a good idea. And we can objectively disagree about what's going on. At the same time, be okay with saying, okay, I understand that you're going to still make the call because you're the boss. So I'm going to follow and commit, you know, after we make that decision. But do you have that courage to be go? So one of the things when we interview people in the company and other teams, I try to put them in a spot where they're forced to disagree with me. And I actually make an argument. I push them a lot to see how well they can do it. And I'm actually just looking for one, do they have the courage to push back? And not just anytime somebody's just, you know, agrees with me right away, just because they know maybe the guy or the gal, you know, that, you know, going to hire them. I'm looking for just seeing what kind of, I want to look for that swagger, but with also, as you probably know, as a coach, there's a healthy amount of swagger that just teeters between having that swagger and having that ability to speak up because you know it's the right thing to do, but not reach into this cocky overconfidence where you can't be talked to and you can't be coachable. So that's what I look for, man, when I'm building these teams out.
Yeah, that's excellent. You know, it made me think I'm real fortunate our school system allows me to bring in the coaches I want to bring in. And yeah. I won't bring in a coach. I mean, you could have been phenomenal at your sport or maybe not very good at it. I'm not going to bring in the coach that doesn't fit into our culture. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't want yes men, but I want people that are running the same direction. And I give my coaches a lot of freedom, man. Like if I hire you, I'm going to give you a lot of freedom to do your job. I'll give them some guidance and let them do their job. But I also give them a lot of freedom. Hey, make suggestions. Or if we're doing something and you say, hey, maybe we should do it this way. I would say 99% of the time, I'm like, cool. I didn't think about that. Let's do it. Or if I push back and be like, no, here's why we're doing it this way. Then are you able to make the adjustment and say, oh, now that makes sense. Or say, well, coach, like I still kind of think. Anyway, so it's good to have people on your team. Like you said, they can kind of, they're confident enough to run their own direction, do their own thing and use their skill set, but it's all within the confines of the team. Like I say, cause you're all kind of going the same direction. So
that's 100%, man.
Yeah. It's funny because it doesn't matter the area. As you study high level people or high level organizations, there's so many things, so many principles that apply in each of those, right? It crosses over. It applies in the military. It applies at Atreyu. It applies at Atreyu. It applies in your personal life in some form or fashion. You know? And so we always say on here, your principles are principles. Once you know them, you can apply them. You know, so it's cool to be able to see that. And that's why for me personally, I like when I'm studying, I'm not just studying coaching books, or I don't just listen to coaching podcasts. I'm trying to learn from businessmen like you. I'm studying businessmen. I'm reading business books. What do these CEOs do that we can use in our, you know, in our organization to make us better? And so I'm getting a free education as I'm getting to interview you as well.
Oh, I dig it, man. Now you can tell the best guys and gals in the industry. I always, when you look at the ones that are at the top, Chad, you always find that they're naturally curious people, you know, and they're folks that just, they gotta pull that sweater string. And you can see that too in young kids too, when you're growing up, they're the ones always, they ask really good questions growing up. And you always like, that's going to be a leader. Great leaders ask great questions just because they're always trying to figure out why people tick a certain way. Yeah. Why is it they're trying to understand their situation as opposed to folks who just kind of make a commitment and go. So I think it's great. It's refreshing to hear that you kind of take that approach.
Yeah. Now you guys all, you know, being a running company and following your social media. And by the way, you guys just crush it on social media.
Hey, thanks, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's cool because it seems like an approachable company. Like you said, it seems like a very approachable company. It's one that you can connect with. And of course you guys got great products and you have to have that for the long run. Right.
Yeah.
But you guys are all, you have physicality. So you're moving, you're running, you're doing it, you know, you're doing workouts. Tell me about some of the things that you guys might do together as a culture, as people working together. Are you guys like going out and running marathons on the weekends? Are you guys doing some strength training together? Tell me a little bit about the physicality camaraderie.
Yeah, no, that's definitely part of it. I mean, I'll give you an example. Michael and I will have heck, one of the first talks we ever had, we'll talk strategy on a run. Part of it is to be uncomfortable. Like we'll kind of do it at a clip that maybe is a little bit quick. But it also kind of helps us. Maybe I just chalk that up to us being kind of this constantly moving guys. So in a lot of ways, it's better to talk on a run than it is to go talk on a, you know, to go talk on a desk or something. But we do do things like that. We'll do moving meetings, we call all the time, which is just, you know, really culturally sound and aligned with who we are as a running company. I also find ourselves, like, we were actually supporting some folks out of the Ironman, you know, on our team, and some other folks that are athletes or customers alike that we'll go and meet them on the weekend in Galveston. There was Ironman that we had. And so we went out there, did a half iron and watched, you know, folks also supporting the brand. And so, yeah, as a team, it's part of the mix. And it's definitely part of my DNA too. Actually, as a matter of fact, the first 2 weeks or so, I think I was at the FinTech. We had an executive every month or every quarter to come up with some kind of team meetup or whatever. And so most folks did brunch, or most folks went out there and we did some kind of conference talk or whatever. I had everybody meet me down here at Town Lake here in Austin, Texas, by the water. And I had some ammo cans there and some stretchers, and I just said, just show up in comfortable PTs, you know, physical training clothes. And these are, some of them are very traditional executives, you know, and they just, I said, don't worry, we're going to go at the pace of the slowest person. So no one's going to get left behind. I'm going to take it easy. And the first thing that I did, I remember we got all nine of them, and I said, okay, well, follow me. And we all went and dunked them straight into the lake, man. It's just, you can imagine, I'm like, I'm either going to get fired right now or they're going to love this, or, you know, whatever. And so we took them into the water, man. And then we just went and did PT for about an hour and a half after that. And so to answer your question, yeah, absolutely. It's part of the DNA. It's what makes our company great, I think, to being able to move and be able to use our sport as a way to also kind of be able to think clearly and do work.
Yeah, I love that for a lot of reasons. One is, anybody who's ever been on a team, you know, one of the reasons why you get so close with your teammates and become like family, and same way in the military, but it's the blood, sweat, the tears, the sacrifice that you're going through. There's something about that that draws you closer than almost anything else in the world. So that's awesome.
Yeah, man.
Also something, I figured this out, or I heard this a long time ago, and something I read, and it works really well. And especially with males, and there's a difference between men and women on this apparently, but I know I've used it many times with my athletes, with my male wrestlers. And so they say, for guys, a lot of times, if you're having a serious conversation about something, you're getting deep on something, a lot of times guys maybe won't open up as much if they're sitting face to face, like at a desk or whatever. But if they're walking side by side, or sitting side by side in a car or whatever, side by side, they'll open up and they'll begin to converse a lot better. So a lot of times my athletes, maybe I got to talk to the kid about his grades, or maybe there's something going on at home. Like, hey, let's go walk, and we'll walk down the hall in the school, you know, we'll just be shoulder to shoulder walking. Or sometimes like, hey, we're going to go play disc golf, and I'll take them out playing disc golf, you know, and we'll be shoulder to shoulder walking and talking. And a lot happens there, man. Great conversation, great connections happen there too. So I can imagine, as you're running, you guys are probably coming up with some really phenomenal ideas.
Oh yeah. It's such a simple thing. I'm glad you say that, Chad. It's such a simple thing. You're right though. But the science behind this stuff, this is why, like, as a leader, it's so good. And as a coach, I mean, I guess if you describe what a president is, it might be more like this coach position, right? Where you're putting the right players in the right teams, you make sure it's being built. It's kind of an interesting analogy. But I do think that this studied things like that, you know, you might get through a whole book and realize that, oh crap, you know, the position of people and the way we converse, depending on personalities, really do work. And you're absolutely right. I can, now that you say that, I think that this is probably a reason why I think it is more productive to do it that way. There's also, I think, something maybe that's awkward about being able to look at a guy face to face if you're not trying to go, you know, a fight with each other or something. Yeah, just, yeah. So instead, if you're trying to solve something, let's remove that and let's go side by side and figure out what that is. That's great. And that's cool insight.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So where do you guys see yourself going as a company at Treyu? Like, looking at big picture down the road.
Yeah.
Are you trying to be a Nike, an Under Armour? Are you trying to be niche in the running community? Kind of give me the big picture that you guys talk about.
Man, it's an awesome question. We talk about it often, where it goes. And so I'll say this, the quick answer is we don't know exactly. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because I think we're waiting to, in some ways, we understand that some of those chapters are going to unfold and allow us to make different decisions as we move along. That only is to say that doesn't mean where we want to be or what we think we're going to be and what we're striving for mission-wise. But when it comes to where we think we'll land, we're going to be Nike or not Nike. It's hard to say yes or no, only because I think the world is going to be very different 5 or 10 years from now. And so understanding what that world looks like hopefully allows us to be the best company we possibly can, the best team we can in that environment. But I'll answer your question like this. The conversation we talk about, it's kind of my accountability part of where we're building the company is at the end of the day, no matter how exactly it looks like or what exactly we're doing, what does the company need to be? And so the company really, we put a lot of time and effort in making sure that we're really a brand that people recognize as a way, we want to be a brand that people don't look at as just footwear, or we won't want to be a brand that where folks look at and they say, oh, those are the guys that build, you know, these really minimal type shoes or whatever. We almost want the product to be secondary. We know that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the biggest compliment you could give our company is if somebody did something, if you saw grit, right? If you saw some athlete, right, at a wrestling match and did something and you could tell they were just wearing like kind of a singlet that was like a hand-me-down and, you know, they just kind of looked busted. They looked like they maybe didn't take a shower or whatever, but they're just fierce. And it was just no BS. They were just going in there. They had one job to fight. They've been training. They don't care about what other people think about them. They don't care about what the world says they have to look like. To them, they're there for a job. It'd be no bigger compliment than 5, 10 years from now to said, man, that person's in it. Like, that's in a tray you move. Like, if someone said that word as they talked about those kind of people, that would be ultimate success for us. And so maybe it's more of the likes of being more like a company, like a Patagonia or something, that it isn't necessarily about making the bounds and leaps that Nike's at. But it's something that when people recognize your brand, you think about it, you think about what it stands for first, then you think about the cool, you know, products that come along with it.
Excellent. Absolutely. Excellent. Yeah.
Listen, that's where we're going. I know it probably wasn't the like, hey, we're going to be at a, you know, $900 million valuation or whatever. If that happens, that's great. But I think for us, it's much more important, even the way we run it, you know, in the company, it's much more important that we're still growing very quickly, but I would say we're probably not growing as quickly as most companies with our success right now would be growing. You know, I would be out there probably if I was a normal, you know, another tech company or another product company and be raising money and all these other things. I mean, even look at our followers right now, a brand like us at this point in time should probably be double the amount of followers on Instagram. However, if you look at our engagement rate, it's very high. So with the group that we do have, we're very potent and we really resonate. I'd rather grow that way all day long than have 1 million followers where only 50 people care about what we're saying. Because go find your home somewhere else, that's totally fine. But right here, we're kind of building a brand that really matters. And if it resonates with you, that's why every time you get a pair of shoes, it'll say, you know, our customer service folks and our emails will say, welcome to the team. Because it is a team. You're joining the Atreyu team at this point.
Yeah. I tell you what, that stood out for me whenever I ordered my first pair of shoes and got them in and it said, welcome to the team. That kind of jumped off the page right away.
That's awesome.
I would rather, well, you know, I'm only going to make a connection with companies and try to reach out to companies and people that I feel like are making a difference and I'm believing their values and their mission. I feel like that they're impactful. You know, those are the kind of people that I want to support. You're the kind of company that I want to support, you know, and so I love that. To me, it's more important about like who you guys are than you having a $9 million, billion-dollar valuation, you know, 5 or 6 years from now, whatever. So, I think that whenever you are doing things the way you are, you're going to be highly successful. You know, you're doing all those things. And it's kind of like, you know, when I talk to athletes, you can't control winning. You can't guarantee winning. Mm-hmm. What you can control are all the little things to put yourself in the best position to win, right? So we can control the way we train, the way we eat, the way we sleep, our lifestyle. We can control all those things. And then when it comes game day or competition time, you've put yourself in a position to win, you know, so you guys are controlling all these controllables and then you're putting yourself in a really good position to have everybody look and know exactly who Atreyu is and what it stands for, you know, which I love. Yeah. But I got to ask you before I forget too, man, because where did the name come from, Atreyu?
Oh man, it's the name has got a lot of meanings to a lot of folks. What the name means to us, actually the word Atreyu doesn't have a fully defined name, but when you look at some folklore out there, or when you look at some historicals, the name is warrior spirit, actually, in a lot of things. So that's what the name means. It means the warrior spirit. It embodies that warrior spirit, which everybody has. They just, some folks don't cultivate it as much as others. But so the name Atreyu means warrior spirit. If you ask anybody in the company, what does it mean? That's what they'll say. Yeah. And it's a company that will immediately say, in our mantra is to honor simplicity. We never say that, you know, we immediately will say that simplicity doesn't mean easy. Actually, simplicity means hard, but it means consistent. And it means, you know, it means being able to wake up every morning with that ritual to commit to those things. Because simple often can be made, as we were trying to continue to grow and understand what our brand, you know, brand blueprint was going to be. We've had folks fight us on that. Well, hey, simple is just kind of vanilla. Are you sure you want to have that as your mantra? And we said, we don't only want to have it. We want to honor it, man. I think there's so many things in life that I think we try to do too many things sometimes and never get good at anything. I go, and instead, we all got a natural gift, man. It's something that's burning in us from when we're born. And most folks don't spend any bit of time cultivating that fire. And if they did, by simply approaching that every single day with consistency, you know, you look at a great company, you look at a great team, and everybody wants to talk about the great catches or the great takedowns, or they want to talk about the big sell that this company made, you know, and they forget that it starts every single day doing the exact same thing at the exact same standard over and over and over again. So that's a long-winded answer for what Atreyu means, but that's kind of what it means all the way through what we believe mission-wise. But the warrior spirit is kind of what drives the name every single day.
I like it even more.
Hey, man, good.
That's awesome. So, all right, well, let me ask you this, and you kind of led me up into this. So, because I always like to, if I'm interviewing somebody that's a high performer, okay, talk a little bit about ritual or doing the same thing every day. What are some of your, just looking at you, man, not necessarily your company or anything else, but, you know, Joseph Cabrera, what are your daily non-negotiables? Whether that's, you know, a certain morning ritual or daily exercise or journaling, whatever it is, what are some of your best and most important habits?
Yeah, I think I got a couple, Chad. One of them is I get up every morning, minus some mornings that I'll agree with my wife or something that, hey, well, it's okay, we'll sleep in or something like that. Or maybe we were out with some, you know, had a New Year's thing or whatever. But barring any weird stuff like that, my ritual is to be up about 4:45, 4:30 every day. And the reason for that, that's my time in the military. But actually, as a guy that I found out early in life that I wasn't always the most academically, I wasn't just a natural genius on things, but I realized that if I could figure out, I remember thinking very young, if I could figure out how to, if work equals output, then if I can figure out just how to have more hours in the day than the average person, then even though I'm not naturally smart, I might be able to overcome it by just being able to figure out. So I was obsessed with that idea. And so even before the military, so the non-negotiable for me is 4:45, because most people aren't really cranking up their day till about 7:30 or 8. So I figure those two or three extra hours I get times seven gives me about two more extra work days in the week. And so that's a non-negotiable for me, because where a normal person lives a 5, maybe 7 day work week, I feel like I got a 9 day work week every week that I get to be productive. And that doesn't always mean work in the way that people think, which leads me to my next ritual. Is it's actually more of a recent one where I actually try to factor in time in my day. There'll be time on my calendar that I won't let people mess with, and I'll let them not, I mean, I will refuse to move it. And it's actually just my time to think. It's my time to be with my thoughts. And I've learned over the years that if I can figure out how to budget that time of thoughtfulness and be able to see clarity with what it is that I'm doing, even reflect on a conversation I just had, how I can kind of, maybe there's a couple things in my brains that was going on that I really need to kind of connect a little bit more. I need to budget that time just like I budget any meeting or anything else that's coming in there. And so what I do as a non-negotiable is have that white space kind of blocked out in my day. And it's my time to think. Phone's off, leave it somewhere. And I just, you know, sometimes I'll go for a second run, or I'll just go for a walk. Or a lot of the times I'll just kind of sit there out there, you know, maybe at a balcony in the office space or whatever, and just think. And so that's been a non-negotiable for me, I would say, for a few years now. I think where it really came about was I realized that I'd make these really good tactical calls every single day. And then when I backed up and I looked at how those tactical calls added up, I could have done better. I missed the big picture almost every single time. And so what I realized is, because you're not giving yourself time to actually back up and see the picture, it's kind of allowing like a quarterback to sit in the pocket longer. And instead, all I was doing was running plays every time. Yeah, the ball moves, but what if you could tell yourself that maybe you could get 15 yards on that play if you actually spent time to back up and think about what you were doing? And so I've reprogrammed in my years to just create that ritual of being able to not only step back, but to force yourself to really think about those things. And sometimes I'll even say the one thing that I've also learned is to also just allow yourself not even to have a subject matter, just kind of sit there. You'll find that your brain and your spirit has a really weird way of putting the most important thing when you can give yourself time in front of your mind. Mm. You know, it'll just creep. It'll automatically select itself. And then that's usually where I go. So sometimes it's about, hey, I got a podcast or chat coming up. Let me go spend 30 minutes just thinking about, just trying to maybe recall some things in my life and stuff that might be important. I want to prepare for that. I want to make sure I'm showing my best foot. Sometimes it's, I got nothing. I'm just going to sit there until something comes. And it always comes, man. Always.
Yeah, that is, I love that, man. That's, I guess I naturally kind of have that in my day, but yeah. I want to purposely build that into my day, that mindfulness.
Yeah, man.
I'm so fortunate. My lunch, my plan period go back to back as a teacher. And so that's a time for me where I kind of get to reflect like that, but doing that intentionally, I love that. That's excellent. And I like that analogy, man, with the quarterback dropping back. So that's,
that's
a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you'll miss receivers. You'll miss a ton of stuff. You know how it goes, man. You'll miss things all the time. That's why you as a coach are probably powerful in coaching your players, you know, on things that they don't see, you know? And so if you could be that person for yourself, kind of have this out of body experience from watching your person third person, yeah. You'll find some incredible stuff that way.
Yeah, that's very good. So if you're driving right now and you're listening to this on your podcast, don't forget it. Whenever you get somewhere, stop and put that in your notes in your phone, or if you're listening to this at home, you'll put it in your notes. Because these things slip our mind real quick, but those are great. And I hadn't really thought about that either, you know. And of course, a lot of leaders are early risers, not everybody, but a lot. But adding that, you know, extra couple of days to your work week, that's good. I love that too, because work ethic. My dad was a teacher, principal, really high level coach, but I remember he was always a little bit against standardized testing. And he was like, not that we shouldn't standardize tests. He said, but the thing is, you can't test heart on standardized testing. So maybe the kid who isn't as smart, or maybe just doesn't test well, that same kid may just kill it, may crush it in college or on the job site or whatever, or they may have a 4.0 right now because they're willing to do the work. They're willing to do whatever they got to do and figure it out and spend the extra time on it. Where somebody else might go in and take the test and crush the test, but they don't do well in actual school or in actual life, you know. And we all know those people, right? Some guys are just geniuses and don't have the work ethic to back it up. And sometimes they do, you know, but I really like that thought process, man, spending that extra time so you can get great at your craft and what you're doing.
That's it, man. Yeah, it's more about, the best part, Chad, about all of it is what I've learned is the thought process is great. But it's actually the telling no to people when they're like, hey, can I use that time? You know, one of our folks helping us schedule stuff will say, hey, can I use that time up? I don't think you have anybody there. And I'll say, nope, can't. And that's liberating because it allows you to respect yourself too. Hey, I got to respect myself in this thing. It builds that kind of more of that self-esteem and confidence that stuff's important. And then what you said about testing hard and stuff, man, I think that those things, I think as many times as you can kind of get yourself out of what the rest of the world is expecting you to do and be available. It's actually also why I get up early. It's not only being able to create more time and more, you know, days in the week. The best leaders are servant leaders, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so in order for me to serve, I need to be available and open to serve during the day. So I spend those morning hours taking care of everything from email to thinking about a long, hard meeting that I got to have later on in the day. So that way during the day, all I'm doing is firefighting for people. It's just, what are the things going on? How do I help you better? How do I make sure, instead of we get caught up, we all do this. We get caught up in like, I need to go spend just an hour doing email real quick. Mm-hmm. What happens is that's an hour I'm not able to help some person on my team do something that they normally could have been able to, they may have been able to be more successful with a little bit more help here or a little more advice. So that's also why those hours in the morning for me are so critical, is to make sure that I can help firefight during the day.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, as we get ready to close out, I always like to ask a question. You can pick the one that comes to your brain and expound upon it as much as you want, but I want you to tell me about either a highlight, a hero, or a hardship in your life. Highlight hero or a hardship.
Highlight hero or a hardship, man. I'm going to talk hardship, I guess. I think that's one that you don't always get to, you know, dive into. But I think about a hardship in my life actually started when I was a young, brand new team leader. You know, took my first reconnaissance team. 20, 21, 22 years old, full of just energy, ready to go change the world, you know, full of just spirit to go do it right. Show up to my first team. We go overseas, going to, you know, go into theater there in Afghanistan. And no matter how many times they prepared you for this at West Point or how many times you'd read stories or all these other things, nobody really prepares you for the first time that you lose a teammate. And so out there, and what you realize that being, so we were in a situation throughout that deployment had lost several teammates, you know, along the way. And what I realized as a young leader was actually one of the things was understanding how it is that you continue to keep a team going with those hardships. You know, it's a little bit different, like losing a battle or something or whatever. It's kind of like losing a game. You got next time to go, but you usually show it with all the same teammates the next time, you know, usually unless someone's injured and that person will be back. It was a very different, interesting feeling showing up to the next game, so to speak, with that, with less teammates.
Yeah.
And so for me, one of the hardships that I kind of was able to reflect on, and I've reflect on often, is how you're actually able to kind of get folks on the team oriented in such a way that allows you to use that time and use that hardship to hopefully generate as fuel. And most of the time, the way that I've found being able to do that, it's very easy to use anger as a way to fuel that, right? Hey, they took my buddy and therefore I got to go avenge them. What I've learned, I don't know why, man, grace of God or something helped me as a young leader not use that as my fuel, but instead said, hey, look, let's honor these folks that are no longer here. Brother's not here anymore. I'm sure they're going to want us to do the right thing, and not only do the right thing, but I'm sure they're going to want us to be able to honor their work by continuing it in the right ways and not letting them down. And so when I reflect on my time, that's probably one of the things that I think about quite often. I can get as specific as you want. I actually wear a bracelet as a constant reminder for those things, that no matter what I'm doing in life, are you making sure that as you endure these hardships, it's kind of how, not only how you come out of them, but it's how you think about them. And all those hardships for all of us gets pocketed somewhere, either as anger, as gratefulness, as, you know, shock or whatever it is. And so figuring out how to put those things in there, I'd say hardship has been a major part of me kind of learning even in my own profession, kind of how it is that we move forward as leaders and as a team.
Excellent. Yeah, that's good, man. And that's real life hardship. You know, sometimes we have these little hardships in sports or whatever, which can hurt, you know, but that's real life hardship, you know, and taking that and using it in a great way. So that's something I highly admire, and I'm glad you brought that out. And I'm glad you said that. So, all right, brother. Well, thank you so much for being on. And what I'm going to do is I'll make sure that we're putting the Atreyu website in your show or in my show notes. I'll make sure I'm putting your Instagram, all of your social media, and then your podcast as well, and which I've been listening to. So tell me real quick, name of your podcast so people can hear it. And then again, I'm going to have it in the show notes.
Yeah, no, man. It's it's called Professionally Offensive. It's kind of raw. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's kind of been a project for mine for a long time. I've always felt like good talks and stuff, I always just miss a little bit of that grit. And so this is a way to kind of pop the hood and really talk about the really, reallys of life. Like, what's it like, you know, what's it like to really be a coach behind the scenes? There's, you know, there's a lot of these things that I think we don't get to see. So Professionally Offensive, you can follow me on Instagram at Joseph.Cabrera, and Atreyu Running Man is where I'm at. So follow us on the team there, and we appreciate y'all's support. Really do.
Excellent. Like I said, you guys are crushing it on social media too. So everybody that gets on and follows, I mean, heck, hopefully they'll buy the shoes, man, but just getting on and following, you're going to catch some motivation, you know? So thank you again. I appreciate you spending your time, brother. It's been good, and I'm glad to get to know you a little bit. So
likewise, Chad.
Yes, sir. So for everybody out there listening, man, make sure you take a note, share this with somebody. If something touched your heart a little bit or touched your mind, share it with somebody else. And until next time, may God bless you, smile upon you, and give you peace. We're out. Hey, before you go, I just want to tell you, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Coach P's Perspective. And then a couple things that I would ask. One is hit the subscribe button. That way, every single time a new episode comes out, man, as soon as you open up your podcast app, it is right there, ready to roll. You can listen to a new one. The second is, if you would, and we earned it, give us a 5-star review, a quick written review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, that's great. You know, one of the ultimate goals is to grow this show and to positively impact as many people as possible, and that helps. And then lastly, jump over to lanefrostbrand.com. Visit my friends over there. You know, this is an incredible company, family-owned, operated, honoring the late, great Lane Frost, who is, you know, a former rodeo champion, was one of my idols growing up. And this is one of my absolute favorite companies. So if you need ball caps, t-shirts, all kinds of apparel, again, go over to lanefrostbrand.com and check them out. Thank you guys again. Much love and God bless.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step, CSL rep, pop, lock and rock. Coach P, who never stops.